These omens don't bode well, Mother. Mankind may be facing its darkest hour.
Then mankind will have to face it alone.
How can you say that?
Whatever happens beyond these shores is not our concern.
I am Diana, Princess of the Amazons.
These beasts invade our home and defile it with their presence. Enjoy your trip back to hell.
Hey everybody, and welcome to Wonder Woman, Princess of the Amazons. This is episode 2, and I am your host, Andrew Pinkham. Hey everybody, I know this is coming out, or probably going to be coming out a little bit later than I had anticipated. Basically, the way my rules of recording work, I try to record these episodes the week that Earth 2 and World's Finest come out. That obviously didn't happen this month out. For a lot of different reasons. For one, the main reason is Valentine's Day happened this month, and I was swamped with work. And you're probably wondering why the crap would Valentine's Day bother you? Well, here's the deal: my family owns a flower shop, and I am their delivery person. So that weekend was pretty much toast. And I had planned on recording that weekend, but I had completely forgot it was Valentine's Day, and I was just swamped with working with my folks and my family. And just pretty much life got in the way up until then. And so that's why this episode is coming to you a little bit later than it would have. If all goes well, this will be out on the 28th, which is the last possible day I could get this episode out. So, basically that's what's been going on with me. Since we last recorded, I did a little bit of comic buying a couple weekends ago. It wasn't last weekend, but the weekend before, I went down to New Hampshire to visit a friend of mine, and I always head down to the comic shop for one main reason. He lives in New Hampshire, and there's no tax down there, so that's the comic shop I choose to go to. It has a lot of back issue stock. Their back issue stock is really good. I picked up some Wonder Woman issues. Besides that, I've been playing a fair amount of video games. I've been playing Madden. I've also been playing Skyrim. So that's kind of kept me away from podcasting a little bit, but other than that, just business as usual. And I wanted to talk a little bit about some news. There isn't much Wonder Woman news, but one thing that was brought to my attention tonight, as a matter of fact, my good buddy Steven Vaughn sent me a tweet telling me to check out this fan film by Jesse V. Johnson over on IGN, and boy, it is fantastic. I was surprised to see a fan film. We don't see too many fan films, or at least I haven't seen many fan films done on the character of Wonder Woman, mainly because, like Superman, it's such a hard character to portray well. I thought this director did a great job with this independent fan film. The acting was top-notch. I was really surprised. Spoiler alert, if you haven't seen it, I am going to spoil it a little bit. So if you haven't seen it, please skip ahead a couple minutes. But there's your fair warning. But getting into the actual fan film itself, it takes place during what looks like the World War II. It takes place during World War II, it looks like. And it's action-packed, a lot of action. I would love to see this film get made into a feature-length type Wonder Woman film, but I don't think we'll ever see that. The acting was very impressive. I bought the girl who plays Diana. She looks great. The costume looks pretty decent. I enjoyed the costume. So head on over and check it out if you have the time. I'll put a link in the show notes for you, so you can head on over and check out that Wonder Woman film. But really, last time, since I didn't talk, I talked a little bit about news, but really I wanted to talk about my history with the character of Wonder Woman. I don't think I dove into that at all last time, which I can't believe I forgot to talk about that. Basically, my history with the character of Wonder Woman, you would think, would start with either comic books or maybe the television show. For me, my Wonder Woman fandom really didn't start there. It actually started with Justice League, the animated series. Wonder Woman was a mainstay in that series, and then moving on to Justice League Unlimited. And that's when I really started to really like the character of Wonder Woman. And this really, the second caveat would be the Pendant Audio. They're renowned in the podcasting community. If you're into radio drama, they do a pantload of radio dramas and stuff I absolutely love. But they did a series, not Princess of the Amazons. That's my show, Wonder Woman Champion of Themyscira. And it's a great, great radio drama. I absolutely love it. You can't find it online anymore, which is too bad. But fortunately, I downloaded the episodes. Actually, a clip from their radio drama is found in my intro. So a little bit of free publicity for them. But really, that's where my fandom starts. That's where my Wonder Girl fandom comes from as well, is from Pendant Audio. I love the way they portray Wonder Girl in that series. Her relationship with Tim Drake is awesome. And we see that, we see her relationship with Tim Drake a little bit in the, actually in the comics. But the character of Wonder Girl is really, her relationship status is really with the character of Superboy. They get in a relationship and move on forward in, like, Teen Titans and stuff. I actually haven't read that Wonder Girl title. I know they came out with one. They did, like, 4 or 5 issues, and then it got canceled or whatever. But I actually started picking up some Wonder Woman back issues last year, and I've really, really found I really enjoy the 2006 series. That's why I'm covering it on this show. But so yeah, that's really where my history with the character is found, or it takes place, I should say. So I'm actually interested to see if they'll ever get a Wonder Woman movie off the ground. I'm hoping they will, with the hopeful success of the Man of Steel movie coming out. I'd like to see a Wonder Woman film be put out there. I think they could do it. I also want to see... I want to see Warner Brothers take this idea that Marvel has set in place with the Avengers, or leading up to like the Justice League movie. I'd like to see we already have a Green Lantern movie. I'd like to see a Flash movie. I'd like to see, like I said, a Wonder Woman film. We already are getting a new Superman film. I'd like to see a better new direction for the Batman character, a new actor, new complete reboot, separate from the Nolan franchise, so we can get in line with a Justice League film. I'd like to see Warner Brothers take the Marvel idea and just work it for the DC universe. I'd be really excited if they started to do that, and I think they could start with Superman. So, here's hoping to a Wonder Woman film later on down the line. I have no idea who they would pick as Wonder Woman. There have been plenty of women out there. And we actually might see a Wonder Woman cameo in The Man of Steel. So that would be rather interesting to see, maybe even towards the end of the film. Who knows? We'll have to wait and see. But that's pretty much all I have for this first segment, for my introduction. So I'm going to take a quick break, play a promo for you, and I will be right back with my coverage on the New 52 Wonder Woman number one. Stay tuned, everybody.
Hello, boys and girls. It's your dear old Uncle Joker. We've got an internet access here in Arkham, so I'm doing a little browsing. Lolcats, lolcats, porn, lolcats. What's this? Bailey's Batman Podcast, a bi-weekly podcast devoted to everything Dark Knight Detective. Well, Michael Bailey, where's Bailey's Joker Podcast, eh? We'll see about that. Harley, get our things. We're going to Georgia.
Hey everyone, Michael Bailey here asking you to check out my bi-weekly internet radio show, Bailey's Batman Podcast. Or at least I'm asking you to check it out while you still can, until the Joker shows up on my doorstep. Bailey's Batman Podcast is a hodgepodge type show where I discuss all aspects of the Dark Knight's history. Comics, movies, animation, even trading cards and action figures. Everything Batman related is fair game, and yes, that does include the villains, which includes the Joker. So he won't kill me. New episodes drop every other Tuesday over at www.baileysbatmanpodcast.com. The site also has links to the iTunes page, the RSS feed, my Twitter handle if you're into the social media thing, and the Bailey's Batman Podcast Facebook page. Bailey's Batman Podcast is a proud member of the Batman Podcast Connection, which you can find at batmanpodcastconnection.wordpress.com. I really hope that's the UPS guy. Why can't I have Batman in my basement?
And welcome back, everybody. Wonder Woman number one, titled The Visitation. The credits on this one is Brian Azzarello is the writer. Cliff Chiang is the artist and cover artist. Matthew Wilson is the colorist. Jared K. Fletcher is the letterer. Chris Conroy is the associate editor. Wow, I cannot say that word tonight. And Matt Idelson is the editor. Wonder Woman, created by William Moulton Marston, and was released on September 21st, 2011. The synopsis reads as such. On top of a tall building in Singapore, Apollo shares some champagne with three beautiful women, idly bragging about the activities of his father. As the girls look out over the balcony to the street below, Apollo reaches out and activates something within their minds. Somewhere on a farm in Virginia, a mysterious woman clothed only in cape of feathers uses a sharpened scythe to slice off the heads of two horses. From the open neck wounds emerge humanoid arms and heads growing into monstrous centaurs. Nearby, a strange man appears in the home of a woman named Zola, and as she points a shotgun at him, he warns that assassins are coming for her child. Zola refuses to listen to him and tries to throw him out of her house. Hearing the clamor of oncoming hoofbeats, the man shoves Zola away from the door, only to take an arrow in the chest. Not long after, two heavily armored centaurs crash through the door to Zola's horror. Seconds before she is cloven in two by a sword, the man tosses Zola a strange key, and as her fingers wrap around it, she is magically transported away. Zola finds herself on the floor of an apartment in London, where a woman with long black hair sleeps. As Zola reaches out to wake her, the woman grips her around the neck, demanding to know what's going on. Zola can only mention to choke out that there were monsters trying to kill her, and shows the woman the key. The woman demands to be given the key, but Zola refuses. As the woman gets dressed, she comments that if she wanted to, she could simply take the key, but she is hoping that Zola will give it up willingly. As she turns around, Zola realizes that at last this woman is in fact Wonder Woman, or Diana of Themyscira. Diana demands the key again, and as she reaches for the key, Zola grabs onto her wrist. As a result of that move, Zola is transported with Diana back to the farm. A scream comes from inside the house, and an arrow flies out. Diana leaps forward, blocking it with her bracelets and saving Zola's life. As the centaurs rush out and Diana and Zola are forced to defend themselves, the three women with Apollo act as oracles to him, warning of a storm coming, and the one responsible who will rule in fire. This person will wear a crown of thorns and a cape of blood, with a naked woman at his feet, and feet just as bare. They warn that the Olympians will be broken, beaten, and betrayed by blood. Diana manages to scare the centaurs off, then helps Zola to her feet. From the doorway, a voice calls to the Amazon. Diana turns to see the man who had helped Zola before was actually Hermes, the messenger to the gods. Hermes warns that Diana must protect Zola, because the queen of the gods wants to see her dead. Zola is still skeptical, noting that she doesn't even have a child for them to have taken. Hermes reveals that Zola is pregnant by Zeus. The oracle warns that one of Zeus's children will murder another in their place. The oracle warns that one of Zeus's children will murder another and take their place, according to Zeus's will. Apollo asks where the man they speak of is. The oracles respond that he does not exist yet. With the oracles of no use to him anymore, Apollo burns their bodies and throws them from the top of the building. And that's where our issue ends. My initial reaction for this issue when I first read this, you know, I really couldn't stand it. I really had a hard time getting through this issue. I mean, this to me, I'm a big fan of the 2006 series, and this to me was not Wonder Woman when I first read this story. I liked it better the second time I read it, but I really wasn't a huge fan of it. I just wasn't a huge fan of this story. It was just really, really weird right from the get-go. For a number one issue, I was surprised that we didn't see much of an origin for Diana. We don't see Themyscira. We don't see anything like that. So, I'm really not sure where Brian's head was at with the reintroduction of this character of Wonder Woman into the New 52. Just wasn't all that impressed for this first issue of this story. Not to mention the art. I really didn't care for this art at all. I don't think Cliff Cheung is the right artist for this series. I'm a huge fan of Jim Lee's art when it comes to Wonder Woman, as we will see when we get into that actual issue for Justice League. Just really didn't care for his art style. Just not my cup of tea. But I guess I'm just going to have to suck it up and deal, because I'm going to be covering this all the way until the team changes. So, but getting into the page by page, the cover, I really didn't like this cover. Like I said just a couple minutes ago, I don't like the way Xiang draws Wonder Woman at all. And really, the fact that there's no distinctive Wonder Woman logo kind of irks me a little bit. I mean, we have this iconic Wonder Woman logo for decades, and then they don't use it. They use just some text instead of a logo. Really kind of bothers me. Getting into page by page, I really had no idea who this dude was. When we first opened this story, I guessed he was a Greek god, but we really didn't get any indication of who he was until much later in this story, maybe even towards the tail end of this story. This next scene really, really turned me off completely from this story. And I was really upset that DC decided to go this way. I mean, it was so graphic right from the beginning. Little girls wouldn't want to pick up and read this if they wanted to get into Wonder Woman. I mean, chomping off horses' heads is one thing, but I mean, something coming out of the body, it's just disgusting. And I mean, we got a total zombie-like feel for this Wonder Woman title immediately, which completely turns me off. I'm not a huge fan of zombies. I mean, and I don't want to see that in my superhero comics. And I wouldn't let my little girl read this if I had one. I mean, that's just not Wonder Woman to me. So, the next few panels after that are weird, to say the least. I mean, we see Zola inside her home with this blue man who is supposed to be Hermes, I guess. I mean, he doesn't even look like a god. I mean, he's got bird feet, for crying out loud. That was kind of weird. So when we see the centaurs, I mean, I think they look pretty cool. I think the masks on them looks out of place, but overall I liked their look. Hermes and his magical Diana key. I don't know if Hermes knew that key was automatically going to transport her to Diana. I'm guessing that he did. But, I thought that was kind of funny. It was kind of like a magical key that brings anyone to Wonder Woman. So I thought that was kind of funny. But, apparently that this key that he tosses this girl Zola, that's a really weird name, by the way, Zola. I mean, who names their daughter Zola? That's just a weird name. Apologies to any Zolas listening. this next scene, we could definitely tell this is a comic not for kids, because the key transports Zola into the bedroom of Diana, where she is sleeping butt naked. Is this really necessary? I mean, I get that DC wants, or they don't really care about sexualizing these characters at all, but I mean, is that really necessary for her to be just wrapped up in blankets and stuff? I mean, butt naked. I mean, who sleeps butt naked? Seriously. That just kind of bothered me a little bit. And I mean, I guess the half-naked Diana brings in the adult readers, especially the males. It just kind of turned me off. Just another thing that turned me off about this issue. We get a shot of the new Wonder Woman costume, which I do like. It's not very different from the classic Wonder Woman costume, except for maybe the silver instead of the gold on her costume. But, and I'm kind of confused about this left arm band that she's got. I kind of like it though. And moving on, I love this panel where Wonder Woman is blocking the air with her bracelets, protecting Zola. Just an awesome, awesome panel here. Loved Wonder Woman taking down the centaurs. Love that she just hurled a sword, hacking off the centaur's arms, which held Zola. I thought that was a pretty cool moment. Still very, very graphic, but what can we do? So, really liked Wonder Woman lassoing Zola and pulling her back, and I absolutely loved her line here. And I get this was a real joking tone from Diana. I mean, she says, "I thought I told you to stay close." So, I could definitely tell her hint of sarcasm here. Don't like the fact that Hermes is dying. I mean, he's an immortal, so technically he can't die. But the fact that he is dying kind of confuses me. And just basically bursts Zola's bubble by telling her that she's pregnant with Zeus's child. That was kind of weird, but, you know, and it was kind of creepy with the end of this book. I mean, we have three women, which I have no idea who they are, and Apollo just scorching them to death. I mean, I really didn't get where this was going. I get Apollo is definitely the bad guy here, and that's really not the Apollo that I like to see. I like to see the Apollo who's helping Diana. I mean, Apollo, I believe, was one of the gods who imbued Wonder Woman with some of his power as well and raised her in the 87 series. But overall, I think I would give this issue a 2.5 out of 5. I mean, there was some good moments, but really not my favorite Wonder Woman issue, and I don't think it's a really good start to this series. I was really disappointed. And like I said before, I really don't like the graphicness of this comic. I would much rather see a Wonder Woman title that is geared more towards to all ages than, I mean, much like Superman. I mean, Superman is a comic that you should be able to pick up and read to any ages. I don't care. I get that we live in an overly sexualized culture, but I really don't want to see overly sexual or overly graphic in my superhero comics. So, I guess that's that for my thoughts on Wonder Woman issue number one. I'm going to take a quick break and come back with Justice League number 3. Stay tuned, everybody.
Sawate. My name is Stella, and I am the host of Batgirl to Oracle, the Barbara Gordon podcast. Batgirl to Oracle is a podcast and site dedicated to Barbara Gordon, the first woman to hold the Batgirl mantle for an extended period of time, roughly 1967 to 1985. The goal of BTO is to examine the character's history from her first appearance as Batgirl and continue on through her current tenure as Oracle. Each episode looks at vintage issues of Detective Comics and Batman and modern issues of Batgirl and Birds of Prey. I also keep track of news involving Batgirl and other members of the Bat family, and I examine Barbara Gordon's appearances in the media, such as TV, film, etc. I've been blessed to be able to interview writer Brian Q. Miller, and I hope to interview more creators and actors in the future. My goal, most importantly, is to make a fun, entertaining, and thoughtful show that people enjoy and from which they learn. Please visit us online at batgirltooracle.net and look for us on iTunes. Thank you.
And welcome back, everybody. Justice League, the New 52, number 3. The credits on this one is Jeff Johns is the writer, Jim Lee is the penciler, Scott Williams is the inker, Alex Sinclair in Hi-Fi Design, and Gabe Esteve are the colorists, Pat Brousseau is the letterer, Brian Cunningham and Darren Shan are the editors. And this issue was released on November 16th, 2011. Getting into the synopsis, in Washington, D.C., military personnel, including Colonel Steve Trevor, are observing TV reports of crowd protesting against Wonder Woman because she is a pagan and because she, like the other superpowered humans, is perceived as dangerous. Apparently, Diana has previously been with them at their office in the Pentagon, and Trevor asks where she has gone. He is told that she was watching the TV news, and when she spotted a report about a winged monster terrorizing people in downtown D.C., she took off. Efforts to detain her were futile because of her raw power. Wonder Woman is walking in D.C. as a crowd gathers and gapes at her. The crowd remains silent out of fear until a young girl seems unafraid and introduces herself. Wonder Woman and her new friend enjoy an ice cream break together. Steve Trevor arrives and tries to talk Diana into returning with him to the Pentagon. Diana resists, saying that she wants to fight the forces of darkness that are lurking nearby. Suddenly, they are startled to see one of Darkseid's minions making the same pinging sound as before. Several of the aliens swoop down to attack Wonder Woman. Diana is pleased that the battle has come to her and beams with excitement. At Star Labs in Detroit, the winged monsters are terrorizing the workers. One of the monsters snatches and abducts Professor Ivo. Dr. Silas Stone is cradling his son Vic, who was seriously hurt in the explosion last issue and appears to be near death. Dr. Stone defiantly says that he once watched his wife die and will not let their son die too. In Metropolis, at the site of the abandoned Daily Planet printing press, we see lots and lots of winged monsters causing more terror. We are told that portals are opening across the world and that their armies of demons are pouring out through those portals. Someone exclaims that this is Judgment Day. Superman, Batman, Flash, and Green Lantern are fighting the monsters, but there are now so many of them. Flash listens to the radio broadcast in his earpiece as he battles. It indicates that the attacks are happening all over the world, and that the populace is blaming the superheroes. The heroes talk as they fight. Batman and Green Lantern continue to bicker. Flash is surprised to hear Batman has no powers. Batman wants to step back and regroup because there are just too many of the monsters. He prefers having a strategy instead of just using brute force. Superman is having good success fighting many of the baddies at once, using a nearby 18-wheeler truck as a weapon to pulverize the monsters. Back in Detroit, we follow Dr. Stone and his co-worker as they enter a secure medical room at Star Labs, carrying Victor as they go. Dr. Stone implores his son to hang on. Green Lantern is amazed to see Superman swing an 18-wheeler like a baseball bat. Superman and Batman observe that the winged monsters are abducting many people now, carrying them away rather than hurting them. Batman wonders what their motive is. Several of the monsters chant for Darkseid, like before. As the nascent Justice League continues to battle their creatures, Wonder Woman joins the battle. She shouts back to Hades as she barrels into the swarm of monsters swinging her sword. The other heroes are impressed with her display of strength and fighting prowess. They seem to be impressed by her beauty as well. In Detroit, Vic Stone, barely alive, goes into cardiac arrest as his father works feverishly to save him using experimental technology. As they activate nanites to help with the integration of the new biotechnology, Vic starts spouting binary code. Subsequently, we hear a message from Vic's machinery indicate that he is now online. Wonder Woman explains that she has followed the winged monsters, which led her to the other superheroes. She saw their battle in progress and decided to help. The winged monsters are circling above the body of water and start again making the pinging sound, which usually indicates an explosion or other dramatic event is imminent. A waterspout appears rather explosively, and then a large mysterious object emerges from the ocean. The ocean appears to be confluence of some kind, like a spaceship or watercraft. But it may be something else entirely. The heroes wonder aloud what it is. Suddenly, Aquaman raises from the water, saying the monsters and their giant mysterious object were visible in the water as well. Aquaman wants to know which one of the heroes is in charge and suggests that he would be a good choice. And that's where our issue ends. You know, I absolutely loved this issue. Just a pantload of fun to read. The story was a much better origin for Wonder Woman. I mean, we get to as to where she's been. We get the sense that she's grown up on Paradise Island her entire life, moved over to planet Earth, she's on planet Earth. Paradise Island isn't like another planet or something. But she moves to the U.S., and we definitely get to see the relationship between Wonder Woman and Steve Trevor. It's a very interesting relationship, to say the least. And he kind of treats her like a little kid. But we'll get into that once we get into the page-by-page notes. The art was really fantastic in this issue. Jim Lee's art was just incredible. I love his version of Wonder Woman, like I said in the last review. Compared to Cliff Chiang's, there really isn't much comparison. I just think this issue was way better. And this is the Wonder Woman I really prefer to read out of the New 52 rather than Cliff Chiang and Brian Azzarello's title. That is that. And I tell you what, Jeff Johns, he's just a man. I mean, he writes this issue much like a Wonder Woman. I mean, this is a Wonder Woman story, just as much as it is a Justice League story. So I applaud Jeff Johns for that. I thought this was just a great overall issue. Loved the cover of this issue. And the cover image of Wonder Woman on this cover looks absolutely amazing. Absolutely loved it. But the first page we get to see Steve Trevor right off the bat, who's apparently Diana's liaison. And I love the fact that the military dudes didn't try to stop her at all from escaping the Pentagon. I mean, really, what could they do? I mean, they stand in her way. I mean, and she would just pick him up like like a bag of potato chips and just heave them to the side. So, I loved our first shot of Diana holding her sword here, and I absolutely love this next line. Has anyone seen a harpy? great line. Absolutely loved it. I love the next page with Diana and her ice cream cone with the little girl. And I love the fact that she takes the ice cream from the ice cream man on her sword. I thought that was really cool. The next page with Steve Trevor really kind of made me chuckle. And her explanation is great, that she's been sheltered her entire life and she's just done with people telling her what to do. And I absolutely love that, because that is Diana to me. She's so tired of people, just controlling her. I mean, Diana's mother's known for controlling her. Most incarnations of Hippolyta, she is a very controlling woman. I mean, she was controlling in the Justice League cartoon. We see that in the 87 series. She didn't want Diana to go to Man's World and stuff. So I just love this version of Wonder Woman. Definitely Diana to me. And then we see a parademon on top of the building. I mean, they don't say that this is a parademon in the actual issue, but I mean, let's face it, that's what this thing is. I mean, it's definitely a parademon. And then we get another not a harpy. just a great line there from her, and the smile on Diana's face I absolutely love, because let's face it, I mean, she is a warrior waiting for just a good fight. I mean, that's what she's grown up to be. So I absolutely love the smile on her face. It's awesome. Next page really would be confusing to those who haven't been reading this title, but we see Victor Stone are really badly hurt by, I'm guessing, the explosion at Star Labs. And I hadn't been, when I picked up this issue, I hadn't been reading Justice League all along, so I kind of got confused here, but I went back and read, and it filled in the blanks. So, and I really love seeing the Justice League battling the parademons. Very cool couple pages there. Superman lifting the car and smashing the parademons, or lifting the 18-wheeler and smashing the parademons. I absolutely love. Just an awesome Superman moment. This is definitely Superman to me. We cut back to Silas and bringing Victor into a lab with a lot of apocalyptic technology in it. Just a cool scene. We definitely see that Silas wants to save his son at all cost. We cut back to the Justice League and we see them continuing to fight, and then we probably get one of the best splash pages of the New 52 universe. I mean, and this image has been, I mean, they use it a lot when because I read my comics on my iPad, I see that image when I first load up like the DC Comics app. I see this image a lot, and it's just an awesome splash page or two-page splash. It just looks amazing. Probably one of my favorite Wonder Woman pieces out of the New 52 universe. I really love the interaction between Superman and Wonder Woman on this next page. And I love Diana's response to Superman telling, I mean, he says that she's strong. And what's even better is the two-word response. I know. I mean, she's like the Han Solo of superheroines. I absolutely love it. So great. I really like the apocalyptic technology, both injured and saved Victor's life. I mean, we definitely get Cyborg in this New 52 universe. I'm not sure why he's a part of the Justice League. He's never been a part of the Justice League, but it was cool to see the way that Victor Stone becomes Cyborg. And I'm actually wondering if Victor sees Darkseid through that earpiece of his. Or, I mean, we definitely see that Darkseid's up on a mountain. So I just don't know if Victor sees him, or if that's just some silhouette that is being happened there. So I absolutely love this last page with Aquaman. I mean, his ego is awesome. I love his line. So who's in charge here? I vote me. Totally awesome. Oh, my gosh. I absolutely love this issue. This issue was phenomenal. From the writing to the art to the character moments in this issue, just a great overall issue. Loved Wonder Woman in this issue. She played a very huge role towards the beginning. Not so much towards the middle, but towards the tail end of the issue when she's fighting the Parademons with the Justice League. Just a great, great overall story. Absolutely loved it. I would give this one a 4.5 out of 5. So I was just... This issue was far, far my favorite compared to the very first issue of Wonder Woman. So, but after that review, I think I'm going to take a quick break. And when I come back, we're going to get into some emails and feedback. So stay right there. Don't move. And I will be right back. Stay tuned, everybody.
Gathered together from the far reaches of the internet are assembled a network of podcasts dedicated to the first and greatest superhero, Superman. The Superman Podcast Network is dedicated to covering all aspects of the Superman legend, featuring
The Thrilling Adventures of Superman,
Golden Age Superman,
The Superman Fan Podcast,
Superman in the Bronze Age,
From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast,
The New 52 Adventures of Superman.
I've got a few things to say about Superman.
The Carousel Podcast,
The Superman Vidcast,
The World's Best Podcast,
and Radio Kale from SupermanHomepage.com.
Join hosts
Michael Bradley,
John Wilson,
Billy Hogan,
Charlie Niemeyer,
J. David Weider,
Jeffrey Taylor,
Michael Bailey,
Scott Gardner,
Danny Sapp,
Cayman Stoll,
I'm Isaac,
I'm Adam,
Dave Eunice, and co-host Scotty V.
at SupermanPodcastNetwork.com.
And welcome back, everybody. The emails / feedback I have for this episode, I just have a few I wanted to read on air, just to give those people a shout out to say, or needless to say, I should say. First, I wanted to just thank everyone who has liked the Facebook page. I really, really appreciate it, guys. And if you would do me a favor and just tell all your friends who are Wonder Woman fans about the show and have them like the Facebook page, and maybe that'll get me some more likes and hopefully we'll get some more conversation rolling. But moving into the feedback, I first wanted to read an iTunes review by my good buddy Stephen Vaughn. And I tell you what, sir, you have an amazing username on iTunes, the Cannibalistic Vagrant. Just a great username. The title of this review is A Great Wonder Woman-Centric Podcast, and he writes as such: a comprehensive journey of one man's Wonder Woman fandom from the post-crisis series to the 2006 post-Infinite Crisis series. The host provides excellent insights into the history of the character, which will inspire you to go out and find these issues to enjoy the stories at your own pace. A great one-person podcast who passes on his infectious love for the character to the listener. Highly recommended. Thank you so much, Stephen. I so appreciate it, sir. What a great way to start off, leaving iTunes review. I just, thank you again so, so much. But, I only had one email this time out, and this comes from, again, my good buddy Stephen Vaughn. The subject line was episode 1, and he writes this: Dear Andrew, just got done listening to episode 1 of your new podcasting endeavor, a welcome break from my job interview prep, and just wanted to let you know you've produced another thoroughly entertaining show. You asked for feedback regarding the setup for the 2006 Wonder Woman series, so here goes. In the Superman-Wonder Woman crossover called Sacrifice, Maxwell Lord gains control over Superman and telepathically makes him see the Justice League members as his enemies. Martian Manhunter uses his ability to uncover Lord's ruse and convinces Superman to stay out of the fight while they deal with Lord. Fearing the Justice League are the ones who've been influenced by Maxwell Lord and not him, Superman flies off without the Justice League to find Lord, and Diana follows. Arriving in Lord's lair, he continues to use his influence over the Man of Steel and implants the idea that Diana is really Doomsday. So Superman attacks Wonder Woman, fighting his deadliest enemy. After a long fight, which is epic, Diana reaches the conclusion that they can't keep up the relentless battle with Superman and makes the strategy to break Max's influence and save her friend from doing something he'll regret. So she snaps Maxwell Lord's neck. This image was leaked out to the media, and Wonder Woman was put on trial for her transgression and opts to step away from the mantle of Wonder Woman. In the Year One Later storyline, rolling out of Infinite Crisis, the crossover was my first exposure to Wonder Woman character and only followed the issues. And I only followed the issues because I was reading the Superman titles. I found Diana to be compelling, strong, and possessed the strategically prowess of a true warrior as she sacrificed one life to save untold lives. I picked up the first issue of Wonder Woman, and I was surprised to learn that Donna Troy had picked up the mantle left behind by Diana and continued on the tradition. As I knew next to nothing about Donna at the time, the first issue was comprehensive and economical introduction and got me excited to read her tenure as Wonder Woman. The whole Heinberg run is infectious fun and treats the character with reverence and converted me into a Wonder Woman reader. Keep up the good work across your podcasting empire, and I look forward to the second installment and your thoughts on the new 52 Adventures of Wonder Woman. Best regards, Stephen R.J. Vaughn. Thank you so much, Stephen. I so appreciate it. You know, I absolutely love getting emails, so that way I can just kind of interact with you, the listener. I mean, I interact with listeners over for Twitter, and you can talk to me via that way. But I absolutely love getting emails on the show. Regarding this Wonder Woman, Maxwell Lord stuff, I do vaguely recall, I think I have a graphic novel that's titled Sacrifice where Wonder Woman and Superman are fighting, but I haven't picked up Infinite Crisis. I think I have it, but never got a chance to read it. So maybe I should go back and actually read that series. So I vaguely remember what you're talking about here, Stephen. It sounds like a really good series. I guess I'm going to have to dive into that and see what I think. As far as Donna picking up the mantle of Wonder Woman, I was just as surprised as you were, sir. I know Donna a little bit because of her role in the Teen Titans. I'm an avid Teen Titans fan. I've liked that character. I don't like her as Wonder Girl as much as I like Cassie Sandsmark as Wonder Girl, but that's neither here nor there, I suppose. But I'm looking forward to covering more 2006 Wonder Woman because it really is a good series. And I thank you so much again, sir, for listening to all my shows and providing feedback. I'm not sure exactly I have a podcasting empire. You relate to me, and you related me to Michael Bailey, which is high praise indeed. I think I've told you this before, but just thank you so much again. I really appreciate it. So. But I think, guys, with the end of that email, I think that's going to wrap it up for us. You can catch me in all kinds of different places. You can catch me on Twitter. You can catch me on Facebook. And you can stay tuned for the outro for all those details. So until next time, I will talk to you all soon. See you later.